Now therefore I will restore it unto thee. Yet he restored the money unto his mother, and his mother took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to the founder, who made thereof a graven image and a molten image, and they were in the house of Micah. And the man Micah had an house of gods, and made an ephod and a teraphim, and consecrated one of his sons, who became his priest. And this is the verse that I'd like for us especially to notice. In those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. I can't quite imagine what that must have been like back then. Everybody did what seemed good to them and what seemed right in their own eyes. I do know this, that without some guidelines, we're in trouble. And so that's why that's what I would kind of like to talk about tonight. Now, this is supposed to be about Center Aid Plan, and that's what I want to talk about mostly. The stated purpose of Center Aid Plan is found in 6:2, wherever.
Galatians,
yeah, there you go. See, that's what happens when you get old. It says, bear you one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ, or the law of God, however, Jesus, whatever the wording is there. And that's what Center Aid Plan is all about, is to bear one another's burdens. It was started back in 1960 as a systematic way of helping each other with the cost of medical care. Its Center Aid Plan is not intended to cover your routine doctor visits unless specifically related to a claim or an ongoing case. Now, it was originally handled by the deacon, and I think, if I'm not incorrect, that would have been Malin Wagler, am I correct? But currently it's led by a 5-man board of directors along with 2 ministerial reps which serve without compensation. Also, each congregation has a volunteer representative that serves as a contact for that congregation and collects membership assessments, then remits to the office. Claims have been handled by a volunteer up to the time I became involved as well. David E. Miller has done this for, I think, around 21 years, and he also previously served on the board of CAP prior to 1989. Now, there are currently 8 congregations that are participating in Center Aid Plan. There are a total of approximately 460 members. That can fluctuate from one day to the next. There are approximately 300 individual transactions to be processed every 2 months, and that number can fluctuate from day to day as well. So even though there are 460 members, there's about 300 individual transactions which need to be handled every 2 months. Now, Center Aid Plan became certified as a qualified healthcare sharing ministry in 2014 and incorporated as a 501c3 nonprofit tax-exempt organization that same year. The church has grown into 4 churches since 1960. Healthcare has become more advanced, therefore more complex and vastly more expensive. The Center Aid Plan business model, which all of you are familiar with, is fairly simple and straightforward. You go to the hospital, you have surgery or whatever, and you get better. And soon the bills start arriving, so you pay them and turn in your bills to Center Aid Plan for reimbursement. Center Aid Plan subtracts your deductible and sends you a check for the balance. Now, the hospital is happy because they got paid, and I might say, in the past, pretty much full price. We've been buying health care at a retail price. You're all better and you're happy, but Center Aid Plan is not so happy. To sum it up, Center Aid Plan has, by and large, been paying full price for its members' health care for many years, and this is unsustainable. If Center Aid Plan continues on this path without making some major increases in assessments, it will be insolvent in a few years. Now, part of the reason that the board got me involved is to save money. But it's not about just saving money. There are many of us who could easily afford to pay twice as much every 2 months in assessments as what we are paying now. However, there are those among us for which that is not necessarily true. There are those among us that are struggling to meet the assessments the way it is without adding to that burden. All right, so the options explored by the board, one of them was increased member assessments, which I talked about briefly, increased deductibles, which, looking back at some of the older claims of years gone by, the deductible was only $500. Well, today it's $1,000. And, or the third option they explored was get someone involved that knows about healthcare to help stop the flow of red ink. Now, I was asked to become involved last spring. It was in April. My mandate was to stop the flow of red ink by negotiation, contractual agreements with board approval, begging if I have to, education, and helping Center 8 plan members negotiate the murky waters of healthcare reimbursement. Now, if you don't think they're murky, ask me, because they are. According to the Hutch Hospital, the average reimbursement by commercial insurers is 55%. Medicare pays between 7.12% and 33%. And one Medicare claim that I audited recently, the Medicare reimbursement was 42.83%. But that rate of reimbursement from Medicare is unusual. Most reimbursement from Medicare were in the lower ranges. Medicaid pays even less to providers. Buying health care is a little bit like buying a new car. You do your homework, you know what the car, you know what you want as far as the car is concerned, and you know what the car is worth, how much you should have to pay for it. So you go to the car dealer and you find the car that you want, and then you, unless you've got a lot more money than I do, you don't just pay the sticker price, you negotiate. Now, That can be a process in itself. I don't believe in dickering to the point of putting someone at a disadvantage. But on the other hand, I can make an intelligent offer, and if they accept it, well, we're both happy. And if they don't, I walk away. And that's what we need to do a little bit about healthcare. Now, I want to make it abundantly clear that when it comes to emergencies, don't go shopping. You go to the nearest place where you can get the help that you need. I had the experience of going to the emergency room in November of last year, and I wasn't worried about what it cost at that point because I was pretty sure I was having a heart attack. Well, fortunately, it turns out that that wasn't the case, although, you know, with the history that, my family history, it could very well have been a heart attack. I had six brothers at one point. My oldest brother died of lung cancer, although he had several stents placed in his heart. My second oldest brother just dropped over dead one day while he was working. And of the four remaining brothers that I have, three of them have had bypass surgery. So I guess it's no wonder that I figured I was having a heart attack. Well, anyway, so much for that. When you're in an emergency, you go to the closest place that can help you. I have some resources available to me. One of those is my niece, Chris Schmucker. Some of you would know who she is. She and my brother Dan and her brother Martin were instrumental in starting SEMA. Now, some of you may not have heard of SEMA. That's Southeast Mennonite Medical Aid Association, or Medical Aid, I guess. And Chris has a master's degree in healthcare administration, so she knows a whole lot more about healthcare administration than I do. And so I call on that resource every once in a while out of necessity. I also have access to price lists from a number of institutions that are very favorable. I also have, I've already said that. Now, Surgery Center of Oklahoma deals only in cash. They do not accept any insurance, and their prices are very reasonable. Obviously, it is a hospital for elective surgeries only. By elective surgeries, I mean surgery that you know you need, but it isn't an emergency. You have time to plan for and schedule the surgery at a time that is convenient for you. Now, I realize that a lot of you, a lot of us, have been used to going locally, going, you know, where it's the most convenient. And I understand that. But one of the things that we have to think about is saving money for the greater good. In proposing this idea of traveling for medical care, I was really surprised at how few people that I've spoken to in the past were willing to commit themselves to traveling for the greater good. I'll give you an example. I have a member in Minnesota that needs shoulder surgery. Locally, they wanted $25,000 to do the job. And of course, the rep up there called me and asked if I would send a check for $23,000-something to cover that cost. And I said, well, let me see what I can do. So I called around, and first I called Northern Indiana, which I knew would be closer for them, still a good drive from Minnesota to Northern Indiana. I talked to a young lady who's the liaison for the Amish and Mennonite patients at Parkview LaGrange, that's in LaGrange, Indiana. She told me the hospital bill would be between $5,000 and $8,000, depending a little bit on what they found when they actually got into the surgery. Now, the hospital in Minnesota had wanted $15,100 for the surgery. That was just the hospital. We offered this member a very competitive package where he would be compensated for his travel expenses, waived his deductible, and also his copay. And Center 8 plan would still have saved $10,000 from the $25,000 that they had quoted in Minnesota. Well, interestingly enough, he was tempted but would rather stay at home. Now, I can understand that. But I don't know what this man does for a living, but I'm willing to bet that if he was buying a new tractor, transportation not considered, but if he was buying a new tractor, I'm willing to bet that he would be willing to drive to Oklahoma City to save $10,000 on a new tractor. So I know the idea is foreign to you, but when I was working at Galicia Heart Hospital, we had quite a few medical tourists. One of Cora's niece's husband needed a hip replacement and came to my hospital to have a hip replacement. But when they realized that he was a butcher and he was as young as he was, they told him that he needs a better hip than what they had quoted him. So they upped the price to get him a better hip, one that would stand up to the beating that he would give it, for another $2,000. Had a father from Pennsylvania, I think it was Buffalo Valley, although I'm not absolutely certain, whose son needed a valve job in his heart. So he went to his local hospital and asked, what would it cost to have this surgery done here? Well, the hospital said it would cost $120,000. But for our Mennonite friends, we would do it for $80,000. Now, somehow or other, he found out about Galicia Heart Hospital. I don't know the exact amount that he spent, but I know it was way less than $40,000. Now, some people that I've spoken to think it is an imposition for me to even consider asking people to do something like that. And a number of them that I've spoken to said there is no way that I would do that. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid that's what's coming. That's what's going to happen. Now, that's not going to say that if the board gets this all into place the way it needs to be done, that's not going to say that you have to travel. The choice is yours. But what the board can get the job done for is what the board will reimburse for. Now, does that seem unreasonable to anybody? I mean, considering the fact at this case in Minnesota that we offered a very generous package and could still have saved $10,000, and he declined that. It's interesting anyway, but be aware that this is coming, and I suspect hopefully sooner rather than later, because Center Aid, I suppose we could keep on going the way we are, but I'm pretty sure that assessments would have to rise. And like I said earlier, there are people for whom the assessments today are a struggle. I mean, that's evident by the fact that I get payments on the last possible day. And I think if these people had the money and weren't so stretched quite as tight, they would pay sooner if they could. All right. Now, one of the things that I'm working on, I guess so much for that anyway, one of the things that I'm working on and haven't gotten just real far with is we want to establish what are known in the industry as preferred provider networks. Now, if you have commercial insurance, you'll know what I'm talking about. Currently, I'm working on this. Basically, what that amounts to is the provider gives us a good rate for the business we send their way, and we will direct whatever business is appropriate to that provider. We've already done that with the Hutch Hospital. We have negotiated a contract with the Hutchinson Hospital for a 45% discount up front, which you have to ask for, by the way. And then they give an additional 10% prompt payment discount if paid in full in 10 days. So basically what that amounts to is just a smidgen over 50% discount. Now, I think my feeling is that's a pretty fair, that's giving us a fair shake. Now, to give you an example of how this would work, let's say that I'm not covered by Medicare, and I had two separate hospital stays, but the second one was the longest, and the bill for that is $20,000. So 45% of the $20,000 is $9,000, which is a contractual self-pay discount. That leaves an $11,000 balance, and 10% of $11,000 is $1,100 as a prompt pay discount, and leaving a final bill of $9,900. And that's the amount that CAP would reimburse the provider. Now, can you think of an easier way to earn $1,100? Now, I want to say this. If you get a bill from Hutchinson Hospital, on the very front page, it will say there is an additional 10% discount. It says it on the very front page. There's an additional 10% discount if this invoice, I don't remember the exact wording, but if this is paid in 10 business days from receipt, that you can subtract another 10%. Now, I've done some audits on some of the claims, and one member that I am thinking of forfeited over $1,000 in prompt payment discounts. Now, obviously, everybody else has to help pick up that tab. If you don't have the means to make that prompt payment, talk to me. I can help you. We can take care of it. We can make it work. But if you just ignore that prompt payment discount and don't take advantage of it, then that prompt payment discount will come out of your reimbursement. Now, does anybody feel that's unfair? If you do, speak up. I would like to hear it. I'd like to stress this. It's not my money, and I'm not doing this for me. You know, if push came to shove, I could survive, I think, fairly well with just Medicare. But I think that Center Aid plan is the frosting on the cake. It just makes it that much nicer. Well, not all of us are fortunate enough to have Medicare, and consequently, we're going to have to wait a number of years yet before that happens. In order for the common good, in order to keep the assessments from going up, we need to be aware of where that money's going, because it's your money that pays these claims. Now, I'd like to say also in this, or along with this, had a claim recently that the family had done a lot of work and had gotten about 84% of the total bill either written off or discounted. Now, if you are that diligent and you get that much written off, there is no deductible and there is no copay for you to pay on that claim. You will be reimbursed 100% for your out-of-pocket expenses. Now, I don't know if you're aware of that, but the bylaws do indicate that that is the case. Well, I processed earlier this fall, I processed that claim and talked with one of the board members, and he thought that there should still be a the copay, but deductible. There you go. See, it's irritating, but I have to deal with it because. Anyway, he thought that I should subtract the deductible and the copay, but after reading the articles, the bylaws a little closer, the board all agreed with me that, yes, that person needs to be reimbursed 100%. According to the bylaws, need to be reimbursed 100% for their out-of-pocket expenses. Now, those of you who have Medicare, you know that whatever your out-of-pocket expenses are, Center Aid plan will pick that up. In a conversation with somebody recently, they were not aware that Center Aid plan would do that. But yes, that indeed is the case. Also, I had read this in the articles, but never paid any attention to it, that if you have a lot of prescription medication that you have to pay for, there is a $1,000 deductible per person per year for prescription medications. However, if you have Medicare or Medicare Part D, then there's no deductible and there's no copay, or actually there's not a copay on it anyway, but there's no deductible on prescription medications if you have Medicare Part D. So I'm realizing that there are quite a few things that people don't seem to know or understand about Center Aid plan. So part of my job is to educate. So that's what I'm trying to do this evening. I'm trying to share with you the information that I have learned and what it means for you. All right, I think I've talked enough about this. Now, Hutch Hospital is just one example of the prompt pay discounts. The Hutch Clinic will give a 30% discount for self-pay uninsured patients, and it is your responsibility to ask for those discounts. Now, I'm working right now on a claim that is over a year old. Please, please don't wait for a year before you turn your claims in, because memories have faded, not sure what this was for and what all happened here and so on. Turn them in while your memory is fresh. Please. Because then I have the fun of calling, now what was this for? But there's no receipt for that. Well, but we did pay it. Please do it while it is fresh in your mind. So, Hutch Clinic, if you have claims or dealings with them, they will give a 30% self-pay discount. But again, you have to ask for it. Now, along with preferred providers, we want the members of Center Aid Plan, who are technically self-pay patients, to have a reputation of paying their bills promptly. Hopefully, this will also lead to more prompt payment discounts. Reimbursement by Medicare and many commercial insurers is anywhere from 45 to 90 days or longer. Back in September, I got a bill from the orthopedic center over there by Ridge Road and K96. Carol had seen one of the doctors there in September of 2016. In September of 2017, we finally got a bill for our copay for that. And Medicare had paid almost exactly to the day a year later from where we had seen the doctor. So prompt payment means a lot to healthcare providers. Now, I am aware that I'm repeating myself, but prompt payment discounts can make a significant difference in the amount Center Aid Plan pays out in claims. By the same token, what each individual member pays. Remember, the revenue that pays your claims comes from your membership dues and mine, because I pay dues too. If you do not have the funds, and I've said this before, to pay your health care bills in time to get the prompt payment discount, call me, please. You know, the amount may not be that much, but if we can save $100 on each claim, and there are 460 members, if we could save $100 for each member, that would be $46,000. Am I right? Is my math correct? Not quite. Anyway, so those prompt pay discounts and the self-pay discounts, they can add up. Now, I don't want to sound mean or anything like that, but I will be watching for whether you ask for those. If you didn't, again, that will come from your reimbursement from Center Aid Plan. So I know it's a hassle, and I know you'd like to just as well not do it, and I can understand that, but it is not my responsibility to deal with providers. That is your responsibility. I will help you, I will advise you if I can, but it is your responsibility to make those contacts and those negotiations. All right, I was recently made aware that tax-exempt hospitals are required by law to give discounts to self-pay, uninsured patients. And what I'm going to read, the next three paragraphs, is from a letter from Commonwealth Law Offices PC in Culpeper, Virginia. This is the law firm that was instrumental in assisting Center Aid Plan to obtain its recognition as a qualified healthcare sharing ministry under the Affordable Care Act. Now, I am quoting directly from that letter. Members of your health care sharing ministry are self-pay, uninsured patients, and as such, tax-exempt hospitals are required under federal law to give them price discounts based upon their net taxable income. Now, is there anybody that didn't understand that? What kind of patients are we?
Uninsured, self-pay.
And see, when you present as uninsured, that automatically qualifies you for discounts. Now, again, I'm not trying to be cheap by any means. But what I do want is a fair playing field. And remembering that we are in this together, it behooves us all to do the best that we can to conserve resources. All right, so I will not read that again because you say you understand it. In fact, in lieu of paying taxes, nonprofit hospitals are required to have a financial assistance policy that in many cases waives the charges entirely for self-pay, uninsured patients. Unfortunately, this rule only applies to tax-exempt hospitals. It does not apply to for-profit hospitals or doctors. The financial assistance policies of almost all tax-exempt hospitals waive the entire hospital bill for a family of four whose net taxable income is less than $49,200 and who don't have a lot of liquid assets. The financial assistance policies of many hospitals also give steep discounts for patients or for families with net taxable incomes up to $98,400, regardless of how much they have in liquid assets. The tax-exempt hospitals are required to have these financial assistance, to have this financial assistance policy, but, and this is the catch, they are not required to make sure that eligible patients apply for the waiver. You have to ask. 45% of U.S. households have net incomes of $49,200 or less, and 87% of U.S. households are less than $98,400. So it is pretty clear that the vast bulk of self-pay patients are paying more than they should for their hospital visits. Any questions about that? Paul. Yes, sir.
Can you explain the procedure? Okay, we're responsible to negotiate with the provider, but we have a contract, so how do you walk through that?
Okay, now, as far as the hospital itself is concerned, all you have to do is pick up the phone, call them up, and tell them that you're a member of the Amish Mennonite Aid Plan and that we have a contract with the hospital for a 45% discount. And they should not give you any grief about that. Now, as far as that, we don't have any contracts with the Hutch Clinic. But they will still give a 30% discount for self-pay patients.
Now, what about an emergency room call, for example?
Well, how many of you are familiar with these blue cards? Quite a few. Well, those of you that are not, you need to get one. There are some on the back table there. I got 40 of them the other day at the hospital when I was in town. And if we need more, we will get more. But if you present this, you don't have to make any down payment. Most times, if you don't have this, they'll ask you, if you're self-pay, they will ask you for a $200 down payment at least, and maybe more. I'm not sure. Because I've not been in those shoes myself. But like I said, when you get the bill from the hospital, And this is something that I need to work on too, but it's sometimes a little difficult to tell whether they've discounted the amount or not, but chances are they have not. And so you need to be in contact with the business office at the hospital and make sure that you're getting this 45% discount. Now, it says on the very front page of a bill, and oh, by the way, please ask for itemized statements from the hospital. But it says right on the front of that bill from the hospital, the 10% applies if paid within 10 days. You don't need to ask for that. Just make sure that your payment is done, is there. Just subtract 10%, and you're good to go. Anything else? Larry. Yeah. Yeah. That is correct. Wherever you go, ask for an itemized statement. Paul.
Is the Hutch Hospital tax exempt?
I don't know that for a fact, but I suspect.
Yes, they are nonprofit.
Okay. So yeah, I didn't know the answer to that, but apparently they are.
So the letter you were reading, would that indicate that if you are below a certain income level, you can go to the business office and get something in addition to that 45%?
Yes, sir.
And you need to ask for that. And
you need
ask for what?
Financial assistance.
Financial assistance.
Anything else? All right. Now, an interesting trend that we're seeing more and more, and I mentioned Surgery Center of Oklahoma earlier, is we're seeing in healthcare the idea of package prices. The price that I was quoted from Surgery Center of Oklahoma included hospital, surgeon, anesthesia, everything, total package. And they have a worldwide reputation by this time. They have people coming from all over the world for surgery at the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. Now, I remember reading about the Surgery Center of Oklahoma a number of years ago in regards to the model, business model that they use. Now, like I said, they do not accept any insurance. Strictly payment up front. Now, Galicia Heart Hospital is another one. I don't know what the situation is now that they are part of Wesley Medical Center, but at the time that I was working there, they gave some very, very decent prices for heart caths and heart surgeries and those kinds of things. There's one young man from Wisconsin that I picked up in Newton at the train station. He had hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And what that means is the septum of his heart was growing and was rigid and non-compliant anymore. And so he was very limited in what he was able to do because his heart could no longer pump appropriately the way it should have. Well, I picked him up at the train station. They brought him in, and I think he had had some preliminary work like echocardiogram or whatever done back home in Wisconsin. But what they did he came expecting to have surgery. And he was prepared to pay $30,000 up front for heart surgery. Well, what they did is they looked at the echocardiogram and the other stuff that he had brought along. And they took him to the cath lab and they did an alcohol ablation. Now, Dr. Boxberger, for whom I have the highest respect and regard, is the cardiologist that did this procedure. But he took him to the cath lab, he isolated he threaded a catheter into the artery that feeds the septum of the heart. That's the wall between the right and the left side. He isolated that, sealed it off, and then injected pure alcohol into the septum. Now, the young man told me later it felt like a mule kicked him in the chest, even though he was sedated. But what that did is that killed the septum tissue to where it was just scar tissue anymore. That way it couldn't grow anymore. And he went home after having spent $5,000. So, you know, these kinds of things are a possibility. And it's a trend that we see more and more. All right. One of the things that we want to guard ourselves against is the entitlement mentality. The stated purpose of Center Aid Plan is to bear you one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And I'd like to ask you, is this a suggestion or a command? It's a command. It's not a suggestion, it's a command. We are to help each other. Well, who benefits from Center Aid Plan? I think we all do. Now, what are the benefits of Center Aid Plan membership? Well, one thing is affordable health care sharing, and number two is brotherhood. I would like to read to you from another letter, which I just got this week from the Commonwealth Law Offices in Culpeper, Virginia. This is eye-opening. The National Conference of State Legislatures reports that the national average for a family's annual health insurance premiums reached $18,764 in 2017. That is the average family's annual health insurance premiums. By comparison, the most costly family plan and the most expensive health care sharing ministry, which happens to be MediShare, was $9,648 per year, almost half of the average national cost of health insurance. Most health care sharing ministries are even lower. For example, the cost of a family within an Amish, Mennonite, or Old German Baptist sharing ministry is typically no more than $2,100 per year, or 12% of the national average for a family's health insurance cost in 2017. Anyone know offhand what the cost is for Center Aid Plan? $1,400, or maybe it's $1,440. But it's $460 for a family six times a year. Whatever that adds up to, I think it's $1,440. What now?
Well, I'm saying, you said 460, so I said 6 times 4.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's per individual.
Oh, so you got that.
Yeah. So if you multiply that by 2, we're still looking at 2,400, which is very comparable to what this says here. And, of course, that average cost for health insurance nationwide doesn't take into consideration your co-pays and your deductibles and those kinds of things. I mean, I've heard of people who are paying anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 deductibles per year plus the premiums. That's a lot of money. And so I think it behooves us. In fact, it is imperative that we conserve the assets or the whatever that I'm trying to say, we need to conserve those things so that we don't add a greater burden to those who are already burdened. Now, I've got Medicare, $230 every 2 months, that's nothing. But there are other people who are not so fortunate, and there are people who really do struggle to make those payments. So we need to be careful with how we spend our money. Now, as far as the entitlement mentality is concerned, Center Aid Plan is not an insurance plan. We must guard ourselves against the entitlement mentality. In other words, I paid for this, so I deserve it. Is that right? Is that the correct attitude? I see a young man back there shaking his head affirmatively, but now he's saying no. No. We must guard ourselves against that kind of mentality. Now, each decision that I make about where and how I buy health care affects us all. So it isn't just about me, it's about all of us. And when I talk about saving money for Center Aid Plan, it's not me that I'm doing it for. It's for all of us. Now, I'm going to just give this example, and Carol, I know you're going to not like being in the limelight, but I'm going to use you as an example. When we were on our way home from Alaska, we were in Watson Lake, Yukon Territory, and Carol managed to trip over a gas hose and fall flat on her face on concrete. Long story short, broke out 3 teeth here in the front. Took us 10 days to get home from there, but when we finally did see a dentist, they gave us 3 options. They said we could, 1, go for a partial. They said it would probably cost about $2,000. In reality, it cost closer to $3,000, but that's neither here nor there. The next option would be a permanent bridge. That would have been $6,000. Or the last option was implants, which would have been $10,000. Now, I'm going to tell you quite frankly, we chose the cheapest option because we did not feel it was right to ask you to pay for Carol's convenience when she looks just as good this way as what she would with the implants. We have to think in those terms. All right, end of life issues and care. Now here again, this is something that has been somewhat controversial in some of the presentations that I've done. But I want to ask you a question. Do we really believe what the Bible says? Do we? Do we believe when it says in Philippians 1:21, where the scripture says, "For me to live is Christ and to die is gain"? Do we believe that? Or in Psalms 116:15, where it says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Now, I know the reality of the situation is that we all want to go to heaven, but just not yet. Am I right? Unfortunately. Now, am I safe in saying that we all want to go to heaven, just not yet? Well, I'm repeating myself. I think we do well to recognize that this is a God-given instinct to do all we can to protect ourselves and to preserve life. I also think it is important that we get to the place where we want to go to heaven more than we want anything else, no matter what our situation is in this life. And then we wait patiently until God calls us home to be with Him. Now, let me say for myself, that is a concept that I have not been able to wrap my brain around. Yeah, I want to go to heaven, but do I want that more than anything else? I wish I could say that was the case, and in reality, I can't think of anything else that is more important to me, but do I live that way? See, I struggle with these things. Knowing that what God says in His Word and believing what He says, how much do we spend on end-of-life care? Now, it's not surprising that individuals in their last year of life consumes a disproportionate share of medical resources. Medicare, the health insurance program for the elderly, spends nearly 30% of its budget on beneficiaries in their final year of life. And slightly more than half of Medicare dollars are spent on patients who die within 2 months. Interesting that a majority of people indicate they want to die at home in their own beds, but only a small number actually achieve that desire. Now, my question is, in light of the fact that we all want to go to heaven, why do we want to bankrupt ourselves, our church, and our healthcare sharing ministry just to extend life? I want to say, I admire Vernon and Lena immensely. I just pray that when my time comes to die, that I can do it with as much grace as she has. We must face our own mortality. There's no escaping it. We are all going to die sooner or later. Young people, that may be one of the farthest things from your mind, but let me tell you. I grew up under the teaching of Pete Graber. He was an Amish preacher in Napanee, Indiana, and he was a very wise man, highly respected, highly regarded. He visited in Franklin, Kentucky one time when I was living in that community. And he said, old people must die. Young people can die. So, and I'm saying this to myself, first of all, I need to live my life so that when God calls, I'm ready to go, no matter what the situation. Now, I'm going to tell you, my second hospitalization, actually the first one too, I just didn't know it at that point, could so very easily have caused my death. I had a pulmonary embolus. I had a clot in my right leg that went from ankle to groin, and I had a clot in my lung, actually a number of clots in my lungs, but there was a big, what they call a saddle clot, right here. Now this is the pulmonary artery comes out of your heart, and then it splits off into two like this, goes to the right and the left lungs. I had a big clot right there. I mean, it's, you know, what they call a saddle PE or pulmonary embolus. If that had occluded both those arteries going to the lungs, I would have been dead. You would have been coming to my funeral. I wouldn't be here tonight. So knowing that, I still forget sometimes that I'm living on borrowed time, actually. We all are, as far as that's concerned. Since the beginning of time, the mortality rate has been pretty much 100%. Two notable exceptions, Enoch and Elijah. I realize there's a lot of people still alive today that haven't died, But unless the Lord comes before that time, all the people who are alive today will die sometime. The Center Aid Plan Board encourages you to have discussions with your family, your physicians, your church, and your friends as to what health care you want at the end of your life. Make sure you have your advanced health care directives in place and that interested people know what they contain. Unfortunately, I forgot. I thought I had everything I needed to bring along, but you can Google healthcare advanced directives or healthcare directives, and it will direct you to a number of sites where you can download healthcare directives specifically for Kansas. And of course, another resource that is good, is a good place to start, is a very readable book written by Glenn E. Miller. He's a doctor. He used to practice in Indiana, Ohio. I'm not sure just where all. The title of the book is Living Thoughtfully, Dying Well. It was released in 2012 by Herald Press, Harrisonburg, Virginia. Dr. Miller himself experienced cardiac death twice. The first time they successfully resuscitated. The second time he had an AICD in, which is an automatic implantable cardioverter defibrillator. And the second time that thing kicked in and did its job, and he survived that episode as well. This is now 12, let's see, we're six years later. I don't know if he's still alive or not. Don't know anything about him. But I've read the book, and it is a very thought-provoking, thoughtfully written book. And I would encourage all of you to get a copy of it. If I had the means to do so, I would have bought enough of those books to give everybody a copy. But since I can't, I didn't. Now, recognizing that the subject of immunizations is a controversial one in numerous circles, the Board of Center Aid Plan encourages you to seriously consider the implications of not having yourself or your children immunized for common childhood diseases. I have a friend that had the mumps as a boy and was rendered sterile. While this does not happen every time a male gets mumps, as much as we love our grandchildren and children and grandchildren, do we want to take the chance of becoming sterile? Mothers exposed to rubella during the first trimester of pregnancy are at risk of miscarriage or stillbirth, as well as a list of other complications, which can include deafness, cataracts, heart defects, intellectual disabilities, liver and spleen damage, low birth weight, skin rash at birth, glaucoma, brain damage, thyroid and other hormone problems, and inflammation of the lungs. That's just rubella. I'm sure there are very few, if any, people here that have seen a person with pertussis, although I have seen somebody. Interestingly enough, I was told last week that I was exposed to somebody who did have pertussis or whooping cough. Fortunately for me, back in December when I was at the doctor, she had me had their staff give me a Tdap, which is a tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. And they found that over the years that the pertussis only lasts about 10 years. So if you've had a shot back, you know, many years ago, probably if it's been more than 10 years, it would be a good idea to get immunized again. Anyway, I don't think there's any of us. Oh, and Dorothea Jean had whooping cough when she was in Haiti. So it is a disease that is still around. Teens and adults usually are able to recover without too much problem, but whooping cough is very contagious and can be fatal in infants less than 6 months of age. Diphtheria is a disease that is also very uncommon in the U.S., but in 2014, over 7,000 cases of diphtheria were reported to the World Health Organization globally. We've been blessed by having immunizations available to spare us the agony of watching a child die from a disease that could easily have been prevented. I remember being at a viewing of a young child in the community in which I grew up that died of whooping cough. Lo huste, if you know what that means. Blue cough. Whooping cough. I'm guessing I was less than 6 years old, so probably some 60 years ago is when that happened. But I remember it very vividly, and I was quite young. And I mentioned Dorothy Jean. She had whooping cough in Haiti. In 2014, the largest outbreak of measles in the U.S. occurred in an Amish community in Ohio. One unimmunized individual returned from a mission trip to the Philippines where there was an active outbreak of measles. After returning home and becoming ill, his doctor misdiagnosed him as having dengue fever. Not being aware of his true diagnosis, he cheerfully went off to church the next Sunday that he felt well enough and infected many attendees there. In total, there were 382 cases in that Ohio Amish community. There were no deaths associated with that outbreak, but 9 cases ended up being admitted to the hospital with more serious complications. As you can see, the decision of whether to immunize yourself and your children or not is a personal decision. As you can also see, your decision can affect not only yourself, but a lot of other people as well. We do well to remember principles of brotherhood and community as we make these decisions. And we also do well to be charitable towards those that do not necessarily agree with our position on issues. Now, there's an article back there in the back that I've asked the ushers to make sure that if you are at all interested, that you pick up. It's about immunizations. It's written by a doctor who nearly died from a reaction to an immunization, but then he goes on to say why he still immunizes, despite the fact that he nearly died. Only thing I ask is that you read it thoughtfully and read it with an open mind. Now, there has been some discussion by the board in regards to denying claims related to individuals not being immunized for common childhood diseases. No official action has been taken by the board on this issue, but I keep prodding. One of the things this doctor mentions in this article, to him, it is a stewardship issue as well, not just some of the other things that or other reasons that we could use, but he says it is a stewardship issue, and that saving the most lives or preventing the most illness at the least cost. That's what immunizations is about. It's not about me. It's about everybody else. Now, one of the issues that we have wrestled with somewhat is the self-employment tax exemption. Those who are Social Security exempt also exempt from paying Medicare taxes. Now, for those that are truly and conscientiously opposed to, and I quote, accepting benefits of any private or public insurance that makes payments in the event of death, disability, old age, or retirement, or makes payments for the cost of medical care or provides service for medical care, end of quote, I salute you. But here's the rest of the quote. Public insurance includes any insurance system established by the Social Security Act. Now, I would like to say, and I'll just speak bluntly, in my own experience, as well as my limited experience as a professional tax preparer, vast majority of individuals who choose to be self-employment tax exempt do so not that they are so conscientiously opposed to accepting the benefits, rather they don't want to pay the tax. I mean, after all, it saves me 15.3% of my income. In other words, they do not want to turn loose of the money it takes to pay the self-employment tax. However, or somehow, that money feels better in my own pocket than it feels like giving it to the government. Granted, the self-employment tax amounts to 15.3% of taxable income, and that can add up to a significant amount of money for some people. The truly unfortunate thing is when, instead of setting aside that amount of money for use in later life, the money is spent. And when the individual is no longer able to earn an income, ends up living off the generosity of taxpayers. To be self-employed is a gift. I tried it several times during my working life, and both times it just did not work. The first time was for 4.5 years. The second time was for 1.5 years. Both times I ended up going back to nursing, which is what I feel the Lord wanted me to be doing anyway. To be self-employment tax exempt may be a gift, but that decision also has an impact on all the other members of Center Aid Plan. By being self-employment tax exempt, for all practical purposes, you give up any right to claim Social Security and Medicare benefits for yourself and your spouse. The only way anyone can claim any benefits under Social Security or Medicare is to have paid into the system for at least 10 years. In our own case, Carol had almost 10 years of paying into the system, or 40 quarters, but on her own record, she was not eligible for benefits, even though she had almost 10 years. However, she's still eligible for a Social Security check each month as well as Medicare benefits. How can that be, you may ask? Because even though I was self-employment tax exempt in a few of my younger years, once I went back to nursing, I had no choice on whether I paid Social Security and Medicare taxes or not. They were taken out of my paycheck, no questions asked. And there was no, how do you like this or not? It's just the way it was. Today, we were able to reap those benefits, and we're happy for them. Now, Medicare is Centered Plan's hedge against astronomical health care costs for our older members. Remember what I said earlier about Medicare spending? Medicare provides relief in several ways for Centered Plan. First, in significant write-offs for health care providers that have several that have contracted with the government. Next, in what is left for Centered Plan to pay for those after those write-offs. Now, an example, one of our members, last fall sometime, made a visit to the emergency room, was admitted to the hospital for a couple days. I think it was three, but I'm not sure about that. Now, the total bill was $41,028.31. Medicare paid the hospital $3,584.58, to be precise. The hospital wrote off $36,122.91. The total Centered Plan paid on this claim was $1,320.82, or a total of less than $3 per member. Total savings to Centered Plan, $39,707.49, or about $86 per member. Now, on the other hand, had this been a private pay situation, the hospital would have given a Centered Plan a 45% discount, which amounts to $18,462.74. An additional 10% discount applies for prompt payment in the amount of $2,256.56. Total Centered Plan would have paid on this claim would have been $20,309.01, or $43.96 per member. And currently, as I mentioned earlier, we have approximately 360 members. Now, the Centered Plan bylaws state all members who are exempt from Social Security will be assessed 1.5 times the regular single-member assessment. Now, I know that there are a number of people who are self-employment tax exempt who have gotten by with only paying for their own exemption, but if they are exempt and their wife has no 10-year work history, they cannot draw Medicare or Social Security. Consequently, those assessments have been increased to be in line with the bylaws here. Now, Centered Plan was initiated in 1960, and if we use that as a starting date and figure 58 years since then, and figure the additional 115 extra some of our self-employment tax members are currently paying every 2 months, it adds up to the princely sum of $40,020. This doesn't take into consideration the spouses that are not eligible for Medicare benefits because neither they nor their husbands have paid into the Medicare system. And how long do you think the extra $40,020 will last in one cancer claim or cardiac bypass surgery? Another one of the things that the board has done is to strengthen the membership clause. The first paragraph under Article 2, and by the way, is there anybody who does not have a copy of the bylaws? Well, here's yours. The first paragraph under Article 2 states, any active member of the participating congregations is eligible to be a member of the plan. Other persons may be included with approval of the Board of Directors of Centered Plan Incorporated. Now, there have been a number of inquiries from people outside of our own circle of supporting churches about membership in Centered Plan. So far, the answer has always been no. Now, this leads to a dilemma for the board. There are currently members of Centered Plan that are not members of any congregation but are paying assessments and receiving benefits from Centered Plan. It is the desire of the board to encourage all members of Centered Plan to be in line with the plan bylaws, as well as encourage submission and responsiveness to congregational guidance and standards. The board is working to get current practice to line up with the plan bylaws. First or so week of January, I sent out letters to all those who are not members of any They're members of Center Aid Plan, but not members of any congregation. And they were given notice that they have 6 months until the 1st of July to come in line with the plan bylaws or seek another healthcare sharing ministry. Now, I would also like to point out that Center Aid Plan was originated from the Center congregation right here, Hutchinson, Kansas, because I have been in other places. The intention was and still is to reflect Amish Mennonite values. The Amish Mennonite constituency highly values church membership. So as I said, starting in January, I sent out those letters. Another thing that has been allowed to slip by is late fees. There have been a fair number of payments that have been late. Paragraph 3 under Article 3 states, any member who is unable to pay his or her assessment should notify the board of directors or their church representative when the assessment is due. After 30 days, there is an additional $10 penalty for the late payment unless other arrangements have been made with their church representative. Now, while it is not the desire of the board to add to anyone's financial burdens, it is the desire of the board to be businesslike in the operation of Center Aid Plan. The board, as directors of the plan, has a responsibility to all members of the plan. The paragraph clearly states that if a member is unable to pay their assessments when due, it is the member's responsibility to make contact with the administrator or their congregational representative and make arrangements for payment. If a member has financial difficulties, there is no shame in asking for assistance. The shame comes in ignoring a valid obligation. I believe each congregation has some funds available for situations where there is a true need, not just a matter of misplaced priorities. Am I correct in that? Now, the steps to be followed, and by the way, all your assessments, all the invoices that I print say due on receipt. I know that a lot of people like to wait 30 days, but it is due on receipt. What I am doing, I process all the payments that come in. I will hopefully have gotten all the payments by the 30th or the 31st of January. There is still 5 days grace, but please don't try to take advantage of that. Because on the 5th of February, I will be sending out invoices with late fees to any payments that haven't come in yet. So while I am trying to be graceful and generous, if you will, I don't know if that's the right word or not, please don't push it to the limit. Paul, you had a question. You can give them to Larry or you can send them to me. It doesn't make any difference who gets the payments as long as I get them on time. Larry. Yeah. But on the other hand, if you know that if you give it to your representative and it's going to arrive late, now, one of the questions that I was asking one of the other churches where I was, are you going to hold checks for months on end? And I said, no, I will make a run to the bank every day if necessary. Bank isn't that far away, and I am, after all, retired, so, you know, I have the time to do it if need be. So, anyway, it doesn't matter to me, and it doesn't matter to me who makes the deposits as long as I can process the payments. But generally speaking, I will probably be making the deposits to the bank. All right. The steps to be followed in regards to missed assessments: contact the person involved in an effort to come up with a workable solution. Second step is contact the deacon of the congregation of the member in arrears. And third, failing to come to a workable solution with the above steps, and while it is the desire of the board and administration to be redemptive in all interactions, reasonable efforts will be made, as outlined above, to come to a workable solution with any arrears. However, the board has a responsibility to all members and cannot continue to provide benefits to those members not willing to carry their share of the load in a timely manner. In that event, the following applies, and that is paragraph 4 under Article 3, which states, when an assessment is missed, the case shall be studied by the Board of Directors. When two assessments are missed, participation in the plan is forfeited unless other satisfactory arrangements are made with the approval of the Board of Directors. Now, if it is your desire to make monthly rather than bimonthly payments, it is important to make sure your payments reach the office before the end of each month. Monthly payments will not be subject to late fees if payments are made in a timely manner. If you utilize your bank's bill pay service, be sure to send the payments to the office rather than to Larry or to whoever your representative may be, which the office is in what used to be part of our two-car garage. And there are a number of people who are making monthly payments. You know, if that works out better for your budget or whatever, not as much strain to come up with $230 as opposed to $460, that's perfectly fine. That is more than acceptable. And as long as they get to me in the allotted time, there are no late fees that are assessed against those payments. Any questions about that? All right, that is it as far as the presentation itself is concerned, but I do have a few other things to share. Advanced PT has special rates for self-pay patients. Their first visit is $125, and each follow-up visit is $75 per visit. Now, the Hutch Clinic physical therapy rates are more competitive. Their initial evaluation visit is more, $150, but each subsequent visit is only $58. Now, in addition, the Hutch Clinic will give a 30% discount if payment is made up front. To give an example or an apples-to-apples comparison, Advanced PT would cost $500 for five visits. The Hutch Clinic would cost only $308. Now, in all fairness, I was not aware of this when I wrote this up. But in speaking with someone else, the visits at Advanced PT are 45 minutes at least. The visits at the Hutch Clinic, I think, generally are 30 minutes. So obviously there is a need for a lower rate for those. All right, so the Hutch Clinic would only cost $308. And if you choose to utilize Advanced PT rather than the Hutch Clinic, your reimbursement should still be based on the Hutch Clinic rates. Now, again, I did not know all this information when I wrote this up, and I didn't think to revise it when I was planning to come here. And we're always looking for a more cost-effective provider. Yes. Well, that's what another person told me as well. Yeah, and thank you for that. Because as I said, I did not know all this information when I wrote this up. All right, a little bit more. Rice County Hospital in Lyons will give a 25% discount to self-pay uninsured patients. However, the Hutchinson Hospital gives a 45% discount, so I would encourage you to utilize the Hutchinson Hospital. I'm trying to compare rates from each facility so I can give a better idea, but unfortunately haven't been able to do that yet. I don't know if charges are the same at each facility or not. It may not be a level playing field. I don't know, but it is something that needs to be taken into consideration. Is that we do know that we have the 45% discount from Hutch Hospital, and on an apples to apples comparison. If you had a $10,000 bill from Hutch Hospital, you'd end up paying just slightly under half of that, which would be $5,000. From Lyons, the Rice County Hospital in Lyons, it would be 75% of that, which would be $7,500. So, again, this is something that the board is considering, looking at, and is something that we should take into consideration when we seek health care. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I understand that. There's also a number of people from down at Arlington that go to Pratt. And here again, I haven't been able to do my homework like I need to. But I'm just simply giving you the information that I know at this point. All right. Another one last thing. You can get lab work done at the Birth and Women's Health Center. I know that not all of us are women, but we can still get lab work done there. In fact, I talked to Lois about that this afternoon. You don't need a prescription, or you can bring one if you need to or want to. If you want your results faxed to your doctor, be sure to have that number available. You can call 620-465-2712 for an appointment, and the office hours are Monday from 1 to 8, Tuesday from 9 to 5, Thursday from 9 to 11:30, and 6 to 9 in the evening. Any questions? Haven't done anything, but I do know. All right, I'll give you an example. Back last fall, I guess it was in August, if I remember correctly, it was just soon after we came home from Alaska, Ebner needed gallbladder surgery. Now, he'd been having some gallbladder attacks prior to this time, but this particular Monday morning, it just wouldn't quit, and he finally couldn't hack it anymore, and so he asked Ann should take him to the emergency room. Well, they decided in Hutch that he's also got pancreatitis and that they didn't have the resources available to take care of him the way they needed to, so they shipped him off to Wesley. Well, Wesley did a little more testing, I think, and long story short, he didn't have pancreatitis, but he ended up having a laparoscopic gallbladder operation, and I don't know what the total was, but we found out that Wesley will write off about 84% of the cost of the hospital for uninsured patients. Now, I remember this as well. Now, this has taken place quite a few years ago, but when Derek, Abner's oldest son, impaled himself on a cattle panel. He was, of course, life flighted to St. Francis. And the mission of St. Francis is to serve the unserved. That is their mission statement. And I don't remember what Derek's bill was altogether, but I think between Abner and Center Aid Plan, they paid about $10,000. The hospital wrote off the rest. So I know that both those places, you know, are reasonable places to go. So, anything else? Well, amazing. We're going to get done before 9 o'clock. Well, that's all I have. I want to keep this blue card, but if you don't have one, pick up one back there until they're all gone. And also, I'd like for each of you, or at least each household, to have one of my business cards. Not that I'm that important, but it's got my correct phone number on it. The church directory does not have the correct number on it. So if you would be so kind. And then, of course, the article about the immunizations are back there. Let's pray. Father, we're so grateful to you for your goodness to us and how you've blessed us in so many ways. We're so grateful that we have the opportunity to participate in brotherhood through Center Aid Plan. Help us, Lord, to be cognizant of the needs of each other, the needs of others, as well as our own needs, but let's make other people's needs more important than mine. We thank you for loving us, for giving us Jesus to be our Savior. We thank you for this opportunity we've had of being together, and we pray that your blessing would rest upon this evening, the people who have been gathered here, and that we all together may serve you faithfully, and that we can look forward to that time when you will call us home. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.